book.
That'll be helpful.
That one's on. Recording.
This one.
Oh, that looks new.
It is, but... This one is on, too.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Being creative today.
Well, welcome, everybody. Will and David and Jonathan and Jeff.
Yep.
Joshua.
Dustin.
We're the D's.
Justin.
That's right.
Say that one more time.
Dustin.
His pastor is Dale Snyder.
Okay. Oh, so you're from Wichita Falls. Okay.
Okay.
So, we are looking at Isaiah 49, verses 8 through 16. A, I think. They don't want to talk about walls. They want to talk about hands. We may talk about walls, too. So, let's just go ahead and dive in. This is an interesting pericope in that we come to the end of the second sermon song. And then we have a nice reprise in verse 13. And then really in verse 14 is the only time Zion talks in all of Isaiah 40 to 55. So it's really two sections, if not three sections, of chapter 49. So the break is a little odd in terms of how they've done that. And about all we can do is, you know, play with the cards we've been dealt. So let's pick it up in verse 8. And this is Yahweh talking to the servant. And the servant's song again begins in 49 verse 1. The servant feels as though, just to get a little context, verse 4, I said, in vain I have toiled, and for tohu, you know, tohu vabohu, so formlessness, and havel, vanity, vapor, nothingness, koki, my power I have expended. See, so he feels as though I've done everything in vain. And so Yahweh then vindicates him in verses 8 and following, and he massively vindicates the servant in the fourth servant song in Isaiah 53. So anyway, Ko Amar Yahweh, he's saying, in the time of Ratzon, Anitika. So throughout this section of Isaiah, there are what linguistic people call instantaneous perfects. And you only get that by the context. In the context, see, the last two verbs, in at least finite verbs, in this verse would be conjunctive imperfect verbs. You kind of see that the third line down, we have Natsar and Natan. Those are imperfect. So that would clue us in to understand these two perfect verbs in verse 8 as instantaneous perfects. So in the time of favor, I am answering you. All right? And Paul is going to quote from this in 2 Corinthians 6, verse 2. But Yahweh's first talking to the servant. And in the day of Yeshua, in the day of salvation, I am tsaring you. I am assisting you. I'm helping you. I'm being your aidser, to your help. To the servant. And I will guard, keep, watch you. That would be, again, first Nun, the Dagesh Fortin, the Tzadeh tells us the Nun has assimilated. I am watching you, and I will. I am giving you a Levrit Am. So Yahweh's appointing the servant to be a covenant for people. And that's exactly, see, what the first servant song says in chapter 42, if you want to just slip back to that. In verse 6, we have very similar words here. Verse 6, Isaiah 42, I am Yahweh, and see, probably rather than I called you in righteousness, I am calling you in righteousness, and I am strengthening your hand, and see, here it is, and I am watching over you, and I'm appointing you, Levrit Am. See, Yahweh appoints the servant himself to be a covenant, because he's going to enact the covenant. and we probably say the new covenant, finally in Christ. Okay, so there are any number of links with this second servant song, with the first servant song. Then we go on. Lehakim Eretz, kind of fourth line in BHS in verse 8 of chapter 49. So this is a hifilim kum, hifilim fim construct, to cause earth to arise. All right? So the land has been desolated by the Neo-Babylonians in 587 BC, and now the land is going to be renewed, and the land, the earth, is really going to get into the celebration, verse 13. And then another Hifilin Finim construct from Nakal. Nakal means to inherit, and so the servant is going to cause land to kum, arise, and he's going to cause Nekalot, Shememot, so desolate inheritances, he will cause them to be inherited. kind of odd language here. But the land itself, the promised land, is going to stand, and it's going to be re-inherited, even though now it stands in desolation. Verse 9, saying... All right, so apparently this is what the servant is going to say to the La'a Surim, to the ones being captive. This is a call passive participle of Asar. But he's going to say to Babylonian captives, Se'u. So this would be a call imperative, masculine plural from Yatzah. Go out. So this echoes, let's just in Isaiah chapters 40 and 55, chapter 48 is a break. And look at chapter 48, verse 20. See, once Babylon falls and its idols in chapters 46 and 47, then the command is, 48:20, go out from Bavel, flee from the Kasdim guys. So the servant is going to command the people, get out of Babylon. And if you turn over to chapter 52, you see the Tse'u again. So 52:11 and 12, right before the start of the fourth servant song. Saru, Saru, Tse'u, Misham. So turn aside, get out from there. And don't touch anything unclean. And then again, said, "Ooh, go forth from her midst." I'm sorry, and be joined with those who are carrying the vessels of Yahweh. So leave Babylon is what the servant is going to announce to those who are in captivity. Back to 49, verse 9. And to whom Bekoshek in the darkness, Higalu. Higalu would be a Nifal imperative. How do we know that? Imperatives in Hebrew are built off of the imperfect form. So the imperfect of a Nifal would have a Dagesh Forte in the first consonant, in this case the Gimel, plus the comments. So those are our diagnostic markers. From Galah, which means to reveal, and a Hifil, it means to exile. Kind of a big jump. But in darkness, be revealed. See, show yourself. We could do a Nifal reflexive idea. So captivity in Babylon is darkness. Darkness. And going on, upon ways, Derakim, see, Yeru, they will feed. Now, so Ra'ah means to shepherd. And let's just make sure we understand that back in chapter 40, which sets the stage, it's the prolegomena to the whole unit. So go back to chapter 40, verse 9, where we have these climactic words, the last two words of 40, verse 9. Hine Elohecham. See, that's one of the major burdens of this section of Isaiah. see who God is. Behold your God. And God in verse 10 has a strong arm. Zoroach is a major literary and theological motif in this section of Isaiah. You see that in verse 10? His arm, Moshalah, lo. His arm is ruling for him. That's your God. He's a strong God with a strong arm. In fact, in chapter 52, he's going to bear his holy arm. But in verse 11, here we have this Resh Ayin Hey. He also has an arm, like a shepherd, his flock he will shepherd, and with his arm he will gather. See, so your God is a strong God, but he's a compassionate God. You don't want one without the other. They're no good, okay? So the shepherding motif is what we have here in this section of Isaiah 49. So he will shepherd, or they will, you know, feed upon ways. We're back in 49:9. And in every kind of barren place, their pasture. So if you're preaching on this and you still don't have enough sheep and shepherd imagery going, here you go again, okay? They will not, in verse 10, lo yir avu, they will not go hungry. Velo yitzma'u, and they will not thirst. Velo yakeim. So this is this first nun, third hey verb that is hifil based, and all we have left is the medial kaf. Okay? This is from the ka. And it will not strike them, literally. Okay, that main would be just the object suffix. And what's the it? See, the subject of the verb would be sharav, which only appears here in Isaiah chapter 35. Sharav, the Septuagint translates this kasim, and the Arabic would just transliterate that. Kasim would be this southerly wind that would blow for 50 days. So in Arabic, so the commentators say, kasim is just another word for 50. So the 50 won't strike you, or won't strike them, them being the people in darkness and the exiles and those who are in bondage. So this blasting wind, see, will not strike them. Or we would say the shamash, it's in pause, right? It's the shemesh, the sun. So this burning, blazing 50-day wind that comes from the south won't strike them, neither will the sun. All right, because key, and here we have a peel participle from rakam, because the one having rakam upon them, you know, deep compassion, he will tend them. Nahag is a term that you could see in maybe shepherd sheep kinds of texts. This is what a shepherd does with sheep. He nahags them. This is what Moses is doing in chapter 3, verse 1 of Exodus. He's nahagging the tzon and the bakar, the small animals, the large animals. And upon pools of water he will lead them. So both of nahag and nahal are almost synonymous. So instead of this burning, blazing heat, they're going to have pools of water. Pools of water. Well, going on, verse 11. And I will place, Vasamti from Sin, I will place upon my mountains a way, Umasalotai, and my highways, which is a major theme already beginning in chapter 11 of Isaiah, but then it goes to 35, and then it goes to 40. What? Yerumum. They will be lifted up. All right, from room, kind of defectively spelled, because that kibbutz there is really standing for a shurek. So Yahweh's going to make a way for his people. So nice Exodus motifs, right? We have a lot of water, Exodus 17 and Numbers 20. We have this rock that is split open, provides water. Yahweh makes a way for his people through the sea. So now this is what the servant is doing. He's commissioned to do a new exodus and get people out of bondage. Verse 14. Behold, Hine Ela Me Rakot, So from afar, not afar, but afar, from a long distance, Yavo'u. One of the Pentateuchal curses of the exile in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28 is people are going to be scattered to the four winds. So one of the roles of Yahweh, just go back to, 40 verse 11. See, and this would be a major theme in Isaiah 40:55. Like a shepherd his flock, he will shepherd. And you see the second kola of verse 11. There is the arm, and with his arm, yekabates, he will gather. He will gather. So that's what we have here. The people who will go from afar, behold, vehene. They from Zaphon, Umayam. They from the north and from the Yam, from the west. The Ela, Me'eretz Sinim. And even these from the land of Sinim. Well, where is the land of Sinim? Well, it could be an Egyptian city called Pelsuim. Ezekiel 30, trust me on this. Or the desert of Sin. Okay. In the Sinai Peninsula, here we just have a masculine plural. A lot of the older translations take this to be China. See, but that's probably a stretch. Okay, so from Pelsuim, this Egyptian city on the Nile River, they've gone that far, is probably our best guess, but no one knows for sure. Now, the goal of the Bible is not deliverance from creation. The goal of the Bible is the deliverance of creation. So creation sees Israel being restored and gathered by the shepherd slash servant person here, and it's going to rejoice. So here's the command. Ranu Shemayim ve Gili Aretz. So these imperatives, rejoice, O heaven, and sing for joy, O earth. Because they've been impacted too. See, because the earth, look at that last word in verse 8, the earth is shemomot, right? The earth is desolate, but now Israel's restoration means the restoration of the whole world. And let the mountains... Yip-tzaku, we'll take that as adjusive in context. Let the mountains break forth Renan with a shout of victory. Why is that? Ki nakam Yahweh amo. See, nakam, nakamu, nakamu, ami, that's how 40 verse 1 begins. A major theme word in this section. Yahweh has comforted his people and his afflicted ones. If you are an avim, that means you are on your last leg of life. This is the worst place to be. But these are the people Yahweh delivers. So in his anavim, his humble afflicted ones, he will show compassion. Ra came. And we saw that root in verse 10. Moving on. So now we have kind of a new section. And verse 14 is startling. See, Zion says, Azaveni Yahweh. Yahweh has abandoned me. No, he hasn't. He sent the servant, shepherd, see, to restore and provide them with water and pasture, and he's making a way and a highway, and he's gathering them. But Zion is deaf and blind throughout this section of Isaiah. See, okay, Yahweh's abandoned me. Adonai, Shakakeni, has forgotten me. It's the only time Zion speaks in this section of Isaiah. And Yahweh responds. This is interrogative, hey. Can an Isha, Tishkak, forget Ula, her sucking one? All right? The ones who haven't been weaned yet. Just the infants. And in the obvious, it's a rhetorical question. I mean, usually not. They're usually clamoring for food. From a womb, a son of her womb, I mean, Rechem and Beten are almost nearly synonymous. And Yahweh will concede, even if they forget, see, this would be a shakak, call him perfect, third feminine plural. So even if the Nashim here, plural of Isha, even if they forget, which they normally don't, I, independent personal pronoun for emphasis, I will not shakak you. See? Wow. So we go on because I'm being too verbose. Verse 16 then. And this is where the pericope ends. Behold, Hain, al kapim, ha kotik. See, behold upon two palms, I have, a kook or a koke in Hebrew is a statute, right? So here's the verb. It's a geminate verb. That's why I have a dagish forte. It's het, kof, kof. I will inscribe, and then you have a second feminine singular object suffix, you. That's referring back to Miss Zion. Now, on this verse, it's normally the slave in antiquity, and probably places today, that engraves the master's name upon the hands. Never would the master inscribe the slave's hand, or the slave's name upon the hand. So, Yahweh is taking the form of a servant. All right? And what we have here, if you're going to go with that, what happens then, go back to 44, what are we looking at? Verse 5. Isaiah 44, verse 5. This would be a nice parallel verse if you're going to go with Yahweh inscribing us upon his hands and take that Christologically. I mean, it's just kind of a hanging curveball that apparently the Cardinals can't hit these days. But anyway, this one will say, La Yahweh ani, I belong to Yahweh. And this one will call in the name of Jacob, pray the God of Jacob. But here it is. And Vezeh Yetov Yado La Yahweh. And this will write on his hand, and we have a vicar in the North Wisconsin district who actually has this tattooed on his hand, Stephen Neugebauer. Anyway, this one will write on his hand La Yahweh. That's what you normally have. I'm going to write Yahweh on my hand, but here, Yahweh in 49:16 says, I'm going to write you on my hand. So who does the writing first? Well, in the book, we write first. But theologically, I would say Yahweh first writes, and then we write.